Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rex Smith. I represent the plaintiff. May it please the court and counsel, I have about 3 minutes of prepared remarks. And, of course, if you want to interrupt with a question at any time during the prepared remarks, certainly invite that. The roadmap I'd have for you for the prepared remarks are, first of all, to identify the one issue that was ruled on by the district court, and then to outline the conduct on the part of the defendant that was involved in connection with that first issue, and then to discuss the district court's decision. The one issue that the district court actually ruled on was whether the defendant's conduct was legally outrageous. The record in this case reflects that this was the conduct that was involved. The plaintiff in this case, Deborah Pittman, had worked for several years up the road at a hospital doing clerical work. Over the course of her doing that, she'd pulled and pushed on a cart with her left arm and shoulder about 125,000 times. She tore a tendon in her left shoulder. She filed a work comp claim. When she filed the claim, the defendants that have an office in a suburb here in Portland sent out a field investigator to the office where she works. And they took a videotape of the workstation where she pushed and pulled on this cart 125,000 times. And then the defendants sent the same field investigator from this local office to Deborah Pittman's apartment. And the field investigator took a recorded statement, 25-page transcript. The recorded statement went into a whole bunch of detail that Deborah Pittman had pushed and pulled on this cart 125,000 times over all those years. The defendants denied that they were responsible for this torn tendon in her left shoulder. Under state law, there was a work comp hearing scheduled on a 90-day time frame from when Deborah Pittman requested a hearing on this denied claim. The reason for the 90 days is because when you got working people with no safety net and they got an injury and they got to have surgery and they're not getting paid their wages, the law was set up to where these folks can get a hearing in 90 days so that they don't get put into a starve-out situation to be taken advantage of by an insurance company. This hearing was scheduled for February 9 of 04. On February 4 of 04, the defendants arranged for a phone conference with an administrative judge, and they requested that that judge indefinitely postpone the scheduled hearing because the defendants claimed they had no video taken 3 months earlier. They had no recorded statement. They were shocked and surprised and completely unprepared to go to a hearing where they would have to deal with the question about 125,000 pushes and pulls on this cart accounting for this torn tendon. Now, the record in this case indicates that the attorney representing these defendants at that time had represented to Deborah Pittman's attorney, represented to the judge, and he did it innocently. He did it innocently in representing that the defendants don't have a recorded statement, don't have a videotape. They're completely surprised. On the facts in this case, with a local claim office, one claim adjuster from the very beginning, an electronic claim record of sending out this field investigator, getting the videotape, getting the statement, and then obviously when they got their set over and Deborah Pittman was thrown this low-ball, starve-out offer, $10,000, your surgery, your wages, your job, your health care, when she said no. And I hang in there, if I got to wait a year, I got to wait a year. Then all of a sudden, okay, well, we got the videotape, we've got the statement. And by the way, unconditional surrender, we'll go ahead, we'll accept your claim, we'll pay for your surgery, and so on. That's the factual setting. Now, the ruling of the district court was as follows. This is at excerpt of record 210. This quoting, although no reason can justify the intentional concealment of the evidence, the alleged misconduct by defendant simply does not fall sufficiently outside the bounds of socially tolerable conduct to state an IIED claim, an outrageous conduct claim.
Is it your view that every time that a defendant that fails to disclose evidence it has to the lawyer is, when the lawyer makes a statement that this evidence doesn't exist based upon the failure to disclose, that that is extraordinary transgression every time that there's a failure to disclose the existence of
evidence? No, absolutely not. Okay. There's a wide spectrum all the way from innocence to negligence
deliberate.
All the way to what is
knowing
here.
Is
I'm
what?
Sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah, what is it here? How do you describe it?
Pardon me?
What is it here? How do you describe it?
Deliberate, knowing, intentional. But more than that, the inference in this case is that just as the district court wrote a couple of pages earlier, but not in the dispositive section, and that was that the defendant's conduct was engaged in, quoting, to maliciously conceal evidence for the purpose of engineering an indefinite set over of the hearing date to soften Pittman up for an unreasonably low settlement offer. Judge, there's the role of the court before it ever gets to a jury is a gatekeeper. When is the conduct so bad that it raises to the level of outrageousness? It raises to the level of outrageousness when an insurance company, by design, deliberately engineers a circumstance where a setover occurs that will trigger a year of delay, putting a mother of two in a situation where she's looking at trying to accept next to nothing as survival money to get by for a short period of time. I'd like to save a little bit for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mick Seidel on behalf of Travelers and Constitutional States. As there was in a district court, there's a lot of emotional charges here, and I think obviously we know that the issue here is the district court's decision in which she said that properly, simply seeking a postponement of a workers' compensation hearing from a neutral decision maker is neither outrageous nor extreme conduct.
Who asked for the postponement?
Well, That's an interesting issue, and I believe if you read the record, Mr. I believe it fairly is the employer's lawyer. I would like to point out, though, that the record is fairly clear in terms of what the basis of the ALJ's decision to allow a postponement was. And with all due respect to Mr. Smith's rendition of the facts, the issue for the postponement had not to do with some allegation of intentional disclosure of information, because the information that we're talking about was known to Ms. Pittman. She was interviewed. In other words, the recorded statement, she was the person being recorded.
But wasn't it based upon information they had from that interview and from that videotape? I mean, their request for a continuance, the reason for it, could have been developed. I mean, the information they wanted was in that videotape and in that statement. Isn't that true?
Well, Your Honor, here's the issue. I think if you read the ALJ's letter in which he grants the postponement, which is at excerpt of record 99 is the actual ruling allowing the postponement. The issue was not, it didn't have to do with a discovery dispute per se. And it's not that the information in the recorded statement or the videotape, which hadn't yet been transferred to the lawyer who was assigned to the contested case. What it had to do with is this. The original claim had been an occupational injury. In other words, something that happened on the job site caused me an injury. That was the original claim that had been investigated and initially denied. And the reason being is that it had not been a claim for occupational disease, which under Oregon's workers' compensation system is a different type of claim. It is that now that the claim had been structured that because of repetitive use of pulling and pushing a cart, that there had been developed in that process an occupational disease, which is defined as a different type of claim. And if you look at the administrative law judge's ruling on the postponement, he agrees with the defendant's attorney that Mr. Smith had not made clear that this was now an occupational disease claim and not just an occupational injury claim. And then he goes on to address the other issue that came up in the telephone hearing, which is how are these two claims now going to be dealt with in the administrative process? Are they going to be separate or are they going to be single claims? And that is the basis of the administrative law judge's ruling, that there had not been sufficient notice. In other words, the defendant was surprised that the nature of this claim had now changed from one of injury to one of occupational disease. And it's somewhat ironic that the first two cases that preceded us deal properly with the Ninth Circuit's review of administrative law judge rulings. With all due respect, this is not the time or place for anyone to second-guess a administrative law judge's decision in an Oregon workers' compensation claim. Because if we're going to go down that route, you can obviously see the kind of problem that we would have if an intentional infliction of emotional distress tort claim under Oregon law, that is to say, if the conduct of the litigants and the ultimate decision-making by the administrative law judge were to constitute a tort, we would have all kinds of cases in this court in which you would be trying to second-guess why an administrative law judge did what he did or she did what she did. What Judge Stewart ruled in the district court was this is a matter that was dealt with in an administrative law system. There are rules, there are regulations, and in fact there are sanctions for conduct of the litigants and the parties in the context of that administrative system. And she simply correctly found that as a gatekeeper in the district court, that these facts did not give rise to an extra contractual or tort type of claim because it did not meet the level of extraordinary transgression of the bounds of socially tolerable conduct. Judge Stewart was correct. Despite all of the hyperbole and the emotionalism about theories of who was doing what and what was motivating people, this was all dealt with properly inside of and part of an administrative proceeding. In addition to that, the district court did not need to reach, but we fully briefed below and we briefed here, the issue that we're really talking about, assigning tort liability to communications between counsel in a discovery dispute that ultimately is resolved by an administrative law judge. And that type of communication is exactly what Oregon law protects from tortious, from tort claims, because once again, we would be opening the door to all kinds of tort claims if we had litigants who had, after a case is resolved, the ability to go back and sue the lawyers or sue the parties for what they said or did in the context of the litigation. On behalf of Travelers, we ask that the district court decision be affirmed, unless the court has any further questions on this position.
What about the conduct of your insurance adjuster? What do you do about that?
Well, the adjuster is actually the claims administrator. The employer was Providence Hospital, and so this is not an insurance policy. And the cases that deal with conduct between an insurance adjuster and an insured are really not factually relevant, because this arises out of a relationship in which.
What about the lie that was told?
And the lie being that the lawyer for Travelers did not have in his possession the videotape. I'm not sure exactly what.
Well, you heard what.
I understand that, and all I'm trying to respond, Your Honor, is there's really no record of what it is that he's saying was said or not said. What there is a record of a request for a postponement and the reasons for that postponement. And what Mr. Smith did respond in connection with that,
the reason for the postponement again was what?
Was because the nature of the workers' comp claim had changed from the initial notice being an injury claim to one of occupational disease. And what the Traveler's attorney asked for is additional time because this is all reported in the ALJ's letter, is that there had not been sufficient notice that the nature of this workers' comp claim was now a repetitive use type of claim, which is a disease claim. It's not on a particular day for a particular instant I was injured by something falling on me or some particular type of injury. And that, Your Honor, is the reason why the ALJ granted the postponement, and then the case was ultimately settled once that claim in its proper context was understood. And at that point is when the claim was settled on mutually agreeable terms. So there's now an attempt to go.
Nothing came up about the tape?
Nothing. I don't know. I don't believe anything. Now,
This is all made up?
Well, it's not. I'm not suggesting it's made up. I'm suggesting that it is not supported anywhere in the record. There is a process in the workers' comp system for. And they took advantage of the statutory process to go back and say, well, there was discovery that we didn't get, and we think that there ought to be a sanction imposed. And the ALJ later agreed that there was a $5,000 or $6,000 payment that should be made because there was discovery that should have been provided to the claimant. That again is part of the system. That's the remedy. That's the redress that was available and the redress that was taken advantage of. But what I would like to suggest, Your Honor, is that in reading the ALJ's reasoning, it was not because there had been a request for discovery that had not been complied with. It was the nature of the claim that the claimant had asserted and described. Now, we don't criticize the claimant for that. That is just simply part of the process. If you change the nature of your claim, you change the nature of your claim. One of the consequences of changing the nature of the claim is your originally scheduled hearing might be postponed if a neutral fact finder finds sufficient basis for that postponement. I would suggest that postponement not be something that anyone here attempt to get behind in terms of the ALJ's reasoning. to the extent we do, it's all set forth in a letter, and that's at ER 99. So I hope I've addressed
it. Why shouldn't this issue go to a jury?
Because the gatekeeping function is important at the district court level. If this kind of case were to go to a jury, then there are all types of cases in which litigants in litigation disagree with what's produced in discovery or why people...
You're giving us the floodgates argument, huh?
Well, it is certainly in part that, but I also believe that it's the gatekeeping function.
Well, are you saying that there's nothing, if I heard you, I thought you were saying that there's nothing in this record to show that the insurance company requested, wanted a, and asked that there be a continuance in order to hide the fact that they have this tape or in order to wear down the plaintiff for a possible favorable settlement?
No, in fact, quite...
That is your position?
Yes, and the letter requesting the postponement is in the record. Now, Mr. Smith's response letter is not, but the letter requesting the postponement is there, and there's nothing...
Read me the language that the judge used again.
Okay, the language...
That said this was really terrible and bad and all that, but I'm the gatekeeper.
Okay.
Read that again, please.
Now, you're talking about the language of... the district court regarding the allegations?
Yeah.
Okay. She was reciting the allegations that were being made. She wasn't reciting any findings that she was making. She was reciting that the allegations of the plaintiff are as follows, and then she recited them, and I'm sorry, but I don't have the exact language. But that was simply a recitation of what the plaintiff had been alleging. And her actual finding, Your Honor, is as I read earlier, that simply seeking a postponement from a neutral fact finder in discovery or in a discovery, I'm sorry, from a neutral decision maker is neither outrageous nor extremely, or extreme conduct. That was the finding of the district court. She wasn't making any findings other than that. But
she did, there was a sanction on the insurance company for its failure to disclose this information, which it had an obligation to disclose even prior to the request for continuance.
But I think the distinction, that's correct.
What was the language of the court there in making that assessment?
That ruling is in here.
At page what?
I thought I had it, but I don't. I can certainly provide that to you. But it is in this record. The distinction that I would want to draw, Your Honor, is this, that the discovery dispute was not the basis of the postponement. Again, if I could just quote from the actual letter of February 4, the actual postponement order, the employer seeks additional time to process the claim as an occupational disease and states that the employer had only been advised of that on January 20, 2004, which was less than a month earlier. It goes on to say the postponement and cites cases that postponements are always granted in order to allow the parties to present all theories on the same proceeding. And then goes on to cite cases for that proposition. So the issue in front of the ALJ was not whether the claim ought to go to hearing as alleged because of a discovery dispute. The basis of the, maybe I'm making this too many times, the basis of the ruling had to do with the nature of the claim that had been alleged.
I think we understand.
Okay.
Thank you. You were way over time.
Thank you.
Your Honor, you're exactly correct that after the unconditional surrender on the part of this insurance company, go ahead and accept the claim, pay the benefits, there were additional proceedings in front of an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge threw the book. It was about $2,400 and some dollars in penalties. And the penalty was based on a spectrum of unreasonableness. This went to the extreme. It was a maximum penalty. And here's the key to the whole thing, is that this claimant, she just, on her own, without counsel, she files a notice that says, I've got a torn tendon in my left shoulder. The insurance company sends out a denial letter. You've got that in your record. The denial denies an injury. It denies an occupational disease. Here's a critical part of it. There's a judge on the phone on February 4/06. Now, that's not a reported conversation, but I created a record by writing several letters. Those are also in the record. Here's the long and the short of it, is that during that hearing, the judge wants to know what's really going on here. Why does the insurance company want more time? And what is going, this is the guts of it, is that going to this judge, is that I'm saying over and over again, they've got the recorded statement, they've got the video, they've had it for months. Their attorney wrote a letter months ago saying to the doctor who's going to do an IME, look at the repetitive overuse situation. I'm saying, judge, there's no reason for a postponement. It's a pretext. They're trying to get this thing set over for a year so they can starve this woman out. That's what's in the record.
All right. What can I just ask you, the district court said all of that. At worst, the factual allegations are that they succeeded in obtaining a continuance of the hearing because their agents lied about the existence of a videotape. And then the district court also said that those facts were not nearly as egregious as the two cases that you rely on, where there was a direct lie to the insured by the insurance company. And I just, that in this case, Pittman's attorney knew the defendants were not being truthful about the absence of lack of the tape, and nothing was concealed from Pittman. So what is the strongest authority for your position? Please stop pounding on the facts.
The Oregon Supreme Court, the Oregon Court of Appeals have repeatedly indicated outrageous conduct gatekeeping. It's fact specific.
But that's the question. Does this rise to that level of outrageous conduct?
Judge, it's beyond it. It is just
okay.
To lie to a judge and to conceal evidence from a judge on making a critical decision.
Attorney, I thought the attorney was the one who made an innocent representation to the judge.
Because the defendants ones, they concealed it from their own attorney.
Okay, I understand.
Thank you, Your
Thank
Honor.
You. The case just argued is submitted for decision. We'll hear the last case for argument, which is Hanaya versus Mukasey.
Appreciate your passion.
Yes. I just can't pronounce it. It's a Hania. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Hania versus Mukasey.